Hello and welcome to Sportspiel. First of all, a little note from me. It's just great to be back. As regular listeners may have realised, I've been absent for a little while now, sorting some things out. But I'm delighted to announce that I'm back. I'm back on the show, and we have a cracking episode for you to listen to this week. So having been a guest on our Body Image special alongside Justine Lucas and Kate Richardson-Walsh at the end of 2020, we're thrilled to welcome back England rugby star Zoe Harrison onto the show. In a wide-ranging interview, we discuss all manner of things, from her experiences of playing rugby at school to getting one over on the bullies in recent years, the growth of the women's game both domestically and internationally, playing Xbox and other things that they get up to whilst on England camps in COVID times, why Hannah Bottomman may be the funniest person in rugby, and also what happens at the bottom of a ruck between Zoe and Jess Breach when they're playing on the opposite sides at Saracens and Quins, and also the upcoming Six Nations tournament and the postponed World Cup. So a massive thank you to our partners at the Mintridge Foundation. So welcome, listeners, to Sportsville. And now, for many of you, this individual that we've got on this week's show is quite familiar, a good friend of the show. We had her on for our Women a Body Image special before Christmas, and she was also one of the stars of the Sportsville and Mintridge Mastermind Quiz back in the day, where I don't think she was particularly happy with the questions I put towards her, but we move on. But welcome to the show, Zoe Harrison. And I guess, first of all, sort of, how are you? How's everything in your world? And Six Nations coming up very soon. I guess you must be pretty excited for that.
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I've been working very hard. Obviously, we've been in a lot of camps because of the Six Nations. So I've actually been really busy, considering we were still in lockdown. I don't feel like I've been in lockdown, because every day has been like a training day. I've been with the England team and then the Saris team. So really busy, actually.
It's been 4 months since you guys last played international rugby. It's been a longer wait than usual. Obviously, the Women's Six Nations was postponed this year back to April. How excited is everyone just to get back out there and play at the very top level of rugby again?
Yeah, I think everyone's really excited, especially because of the sessions we've been doing lately. So we've been playing, like, when we've been in camp on, like, Tuesdays, Wednesdays. On a Wednesday, we've been doing this, like, game play type training session, so it's been really quite intense. So it's now good to, like, then put it into a game finally, because obviously it was for our World Cup prep. So after the autumns, we, like, completely switched and we turned it into a complete World Cup prep. And so, like, every Wednesday we're basically playing a game. So it'd be like Wednesday you play a game, Saturday you play a game for your club. And I think, because we've been so intense in our training, it's nice now to finally put it into, like, practice, like, actually get into a game and get into tournament mode.
Is that something you've noticed is maybe slightly different from previous sort of, not cycles, but previous years, that maybe there is now that little bit more intensity in training, or is it always the case?
No, it has switched up. It's our S&C that switched up quite a lot, and he said, we're going to starve you of oxygen, basically, in our Wednesday session. So they're super, super intense. And it was because of our World Cup year coming up, but unfortunately that has now been postponed to next year. But because we have had the Six Nations still, we've still carried on those type of sessions. And I feel like even in the summer, now that World Cup isn't coming, they're still going to do some horrid sessions just to keep our fitness levels up and take it through to next year.
Something I know in hockey that people have spoken about before is when sort of selection and the camps before major tournaments come up, the intensity increases, but then also sessions can get maybe a little bit feisty and more competitive than usual. Is that something that you found, or is there still that really good team harmony?
I think because our, like, sessions on the Wednesday were, like, a game, they were quite feisty anyway, like, just because everyone's in their game mode. I have realised that a few of the club games have turned a bit feisty lately, because of Six Nations coming up and between some players. But I wouldn't say it's anything too major to, like, think of.
Yeah, fair enough. And I guess, how do you feel about the the Six Nations having been postponed and moved back, and the format changed as well. Is that something you think is exciting, or is it frustrating, or how do you feel?
The pushback for me was it was good because now we're on our own platform, so we're not with the men. So it's not you have to choose from the men or the women which one you're going to watch. You watch the woman now, which is fantastic for us because that hopefully means we get more viewers, more support, and then more people might tune in. Like it will help the women's game grow. However, the format I do not like, because I personally would like to play every single game. I do understand that there is a problem with the professional level of the other teams. So as England, I'm sure we would be happy to do the full like format as normal. But it's the other teams now can't stay in a bubble for that long. So it is now like the other like unions need to fund their girls team better so that can happen. But I mean, it is what it is. We're just gonna have to go with it. But I would prefer the format as the other one. But I am happy that we are now on our own stage and it's time for us to light up, and hopefully we get all that support and more viewers, especially now we're on BBC, which is brilliant.
I was gonna say that's gonna be my next question. These games are on the BBC, and Sky cannot fault Sky's coverage and what they've done for the women's game over the last few years, but to have England games on the BBC and a standalone tournament, do you actually think that even though sort of coronavirus and COVID has sort of ended up postponing the tournament, do you actually think this could be a big benefit and actually could push the women's game forwards?
Yeah, I think massively, because Sky obviously were great, as you said, but it's not free, so some viewers actually could not watch it. But now, because it's free, like more people can watch it that wanted to watch it, and hopefully because it's now like one of the only things people could maybe watch, then it's a way to get other people to watch it. So it brings more support and more viewers, and things start to like skyrocket up. It's only like a positive for us girls.
Is it slightly frustrating though that these games, apart from the final, but the first two group games are only on the iPlayer, so people have got to actually search to find it, whereas, you know, you can't just switch on the TV and, oh, look, there's women's rugby? Or is it just a plus that it's on terrestrial format anyway?
It is a bit of a downfall that, like, it's an international game and it has to be on the iPlayer. I know that sometimes the women's football, that happens to quite a lot, and you do have to go searching for it, but that is the club games, whereas ours is international. You would think that we could be on the main sort of channel. However, it is a positive because, like, as I say, it is free and like people can get to it. I think we just need a lot of promotion to show that it is there, because otherwise people would probably not really go searching for it on iPlayer. That makes sense. So I think they need to, because it is now on a free channel and everyone can access it, they do need to push that it is there for people to watch.
I think what hopefully the viewing figures will show is that the demand for women's rugby and the appetite for it is constantly increasing. I remember being at Sandy Park in 2019 when you guys played Italy in front of like 10,000 people, and then the next week you played in front of something like 20,000 at Twickenham. But then conversely, now you're going to be playing in front of no fans. How? Because I guess you did that in the autumn when you played France and Italy in the Six Nations and Test matches. How was it for you playing with absolutely no one watching?
Well, lifting the trophy in Italy was very weird because it was to no one. So it's quite hard. It's great to celebrate with your team, but it's like hard to celebrate in front of like no crowd, if that makes sense, especially lifting a trophy. We do like miss the fans, because I know like when you're in game mode, you kind of switch in and you're like on the game, don't really hear your fans that much. But you know, when you score a try or something happens and there is like a little bit of break in play, you then hear the fans and it really does gear you up. And like, say you were sitting down for a scrum and it's a tight game, you will hear people shouting. And that's when it like starts to get you going. If you're on your own line defending it and they're about to score and you can hear some people, like that gets you like going and like really like pumps you up. We have missed them in that sort of sense, because it is like you can only pump yourself up to a certain point. Like you need them to be there. But I mean, it is quite weird, and we would like them back. But the weirdest one was, I think, in France, when we played them in the autumns in France. So they normally have, like, drums, like, all sorts of musician-y things there, people shouting, there's flags everywhere. Like, it's actually crazy when you play in France. So, yeah, that was... when we played in a silent stadium in France, that was weird. Because even when I played in under-20s, the stadium was packed. So, like, it was crazy, like, to have no one there. But, I mean, we do really want them back, and it's not fun not having them.
Did it also, I guess, because the second game you played against France, when you came back and you won in the final minute in the autumn, did that almost... wasn't, we wouldn't have been as special as it could have been if fans were there, even though it was a fantastic game to watch.
I remember we'd done that to France before when we were actually at Sandy Park, and we scored, Lydia Thompson scored in the corner, and then everyone went nuts because that meant we won in the final minute as well. So, like, that compared to when we did it at Twickenham wasn't as like it was, I think it was bigger to win in the final minute against the crowd than not.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely the return of fans is something we all want, and the return of regular rugby as well. But one thing I've noticed in club rugby this year is that there have been more streams, and I know I've watched a couple of Saracens games where your teammate Hannah Bottomman has been commentating, which is quite amusing. And I guess sort of where do you think the women's club game is at the moment? Do you think that the league is continually growing? It feels like the... definitely is more noise is being made about it now, and with the introduction of some more teams this year, like, the competition is getting stronger all round.
Yeah, I think it's the streaming has been excellent because the way the league is this year, I mean, Exeter have come in, they're now fifth in the table, and this is their first year in. It's become so competitive this year. Like, in previous years, you did used to turn up to some games and think, you know what, we're just going to walk over them. That wasn't great for anyone because it wasn't great for the team that lost, and it also didn't build us our skill set up or help us with our, like, game management or anything. But now, I mean, the top four, you don't know who's going to be in that final. You've then got people chasing the top four who also you turn up and you need to beat them, but they put up a fight and you're like, God, this is going to be a hard game. I would say there's not many teams in our league now that as at league champions, we turn up and we could be like, oh, we can beat you. Like, we don't. We turn up every week like, right, this is a new week. This is a new game. We need to go in firing. Like, it does not matter what team it is. We need to have our heads on each week and play to our best ability. And I think it's great that they're now being streamed because people can see the how well the women's rugby has come on and how tough the league is. And it's also great because we've got loads of internationals coming over to play in our league. I think that's also helping it grow a lot. But to have it streamed and to be showing people what it is like and how tough it is fantastic. And it is also amazing that Hannah Bottomman has been on this, been commentating, because she is actually hilarious on there.
Would you say she's possibly the funniest player you play with? Or?
Oh, yeah. She is, like, completely the class clown. I've played with her since I was at... in under 12s. I think she's a year below me, so she came up a year after, but we've been like best friends ever since. And she's actually just so funny.
Is she like that on the pitch as well, or does she have a slightly different persona?
No, she can be quite aggressive on the pitch actually, but like off the pitch commentating, that is how she is. But on the pitch, like, she switch on the camera and get a bit aggressive.
Is that something that sort of transpires sort of throughout rugby? Because obviously when you play school rugby and stuff, as I used to play back in the day, like, you do have those sorts of people who are jokers on the pitch and off the pitch, but I guess at your level, is there not really the opportunity to maybe sort of have a laugh and a joke on the pitch? You pretty much got to be switched on the whole time, haven't you?
Much have been, and I would say I do change. I can be really like not aggy, but I can be like, do this, like, look at people in the eye and be like, you need to do, like, as a 10, like, bossing everyone around, but I wouldn't go about my daily life being like, you do this now, sort of thing. And there is people like Poppy Cleal, who's very, very, like, on it when playing, but I like play Xbox with her now, and we have a great laugh on Xbox. And you don't see, like, she can be quite cute sometimes, Poppy, but like that completely switches off when we're playing a game. Like, she is horrible to play against, but great to play with. And like, same as Hannah, like, you have a laugh with her, but on the pitch she'll like be completely different. You do get like the stop and play, and if something funny has happened, someone might drop a little comment, but apart from that, like, no one says anything in, well, say that, but in gameplay, when I play my friend Jess Breach, who plays for Quinns, like, I have spoken to her at the bottom of the ruck, like, because she's really, really speedy. Sometimes I'm like, oh god, she's gonna step me here, and she could go to that try line because she's that quick. And I like get her, I'm like, haha, got you, like, at the bottom of the ruck. But apart from that, no, I mean, maybe in like a little stop of play, someone will drop a little comment if something funny happened, but apart from that, no, I think everyone's like really quite switched on.
So you don't ever sort of get the Joe Marler interactions with the referee or anything like that in the women's game?
No, I wouldn't say you have any of that. There are people that in the Saris team that can get in the ref's ear a lot. I think there's refs don't like us really as Saris. That's classic.
And I was reading something about you this week. It's something you alluded to there about how a lot of people say how much they can hear your voice on the pitch. Is that something that you've particularly had to work on, or is that just something that comes naturally to you when you're in game mode? You're just that person that likes to organise and likes to get the team in the right positions.
I think as a fly half, like, that's sort of your job to lead on stuff like that. I didn't really know that, like, apparently people in the stands can really hear it as well. I didn't realise it'd be that loud, but I think it's, as a 10, you know, you have to get your team into, you're the one leading the stuff. So, like, you have to get your team where you want them. So I've got to be loud in that sense, because my 9's got to hear me, the forwards have got to hear me, and they've got to try to communicate with the backs at the same time. So it's like having to, like, level up from everyone else's voice, so a lot of people around you can hear, so they know what's going to happen. So yeah, I think in that sense, I can be quite loud. But also, you can apparently hear me through the ref mic on some of these streams. And sometimes
I wouldn't say I've noticed it, but
yeah, I mean, it's my brother that says that he can hear me sometimes, so he's probably like listening out for it. But sometimes stuff like kick off, not badly, and I'm like, oh, I'm stood next to the ref, I hope no one heard that through the ref mic.
You hear all sorts of the ref mic through the ref mic nowadays, but you are still, in terms of life and rugby, still very, very young. But you've been playing for England for a few years now. How was it coming into the team initially and playing in a position like fly half when you are so young and you're surrounded by a lot of fairly experienced and well-known players? Is that quite daunting, or do you just sort of, you just have to get on with it?
I'd say, like, I had to get on with it. Like, at the start, I wasn't as confident as I'd say now, because I still didn't know the game as much. I mean, my game, like, has pushed on myself, so I think it's given me more confidence. But also playing with people like Poppy and Marley Packer have, like, helped me step up, because they are quite loud on the pitch as well, and they are very... they're well-known players, and, like, they're very good players. So to then try and lead people like that, I've had to... Like, at Saris, it's really helped me then go into England and start, you know, like, leading people in there. So I think being at Saris had really helped that. And now that Katie's sort of left the team, it's now time that I have to step up more. And now it's, like, really taking the lead. So I think in that sense, I have come out more now. But before, I still... would say that the fact that I was at Saracens, it did actually really help me for when I was in there, like, when I did play 10 or 12, that I could lead the team.
How does that make you feel? You mentioned there Katie Daly-McLean stepping away, and you've got the chance to step up and make that position your own.
I don't know what I was going to say then. it's been, for me, because I was playing 12 and I wasn't, for me, 12, I haven't really played 12 before. So when I was going into an England team, it was quite hard to then suddenly play 12 to the way that they sort of wanted it to. But former people in that position didn't play like that. So it was hard to, like, completely try change the team so the 12 would play how they wanted the 12 to play. So I wouldn't say I was playing my best rugby when I was at 12. And now knowing that I could play in a 10 shirt more regularly and really step up and take charge is, like, I feel like I have now been doing that. So I've gone into, like, when we're playing and stuff and, like, really taking charge of the team, you know, giving my ideas and stuff a bit more in team meetings, taking more control of them. So, yeah, I'd say that's where it's gone for me now.
And what was it like coming into that team and being able to play alongside and learn from someone like Katie Daly-McLean, who's achieved so much and is so well respected amongst the world of rugby?
Yeah, it was good to learn off her. Like, it wasn't just me that she helped. She also helped, like, there was a few of us that came up that were quite young. So she was really good at helping all of us to come up. And also when I was playing 12, it was good to bounce ideas off each other, like when we're on the pitch. So that was, like, interesting to play alongside her to see what she would see and then maybe her to see what I would see, sort of thing. So that was cool. I enjoyed that.
And what was she like as a person around the team?
You know what? This is the thing, like, when you're in camp, you actually hang around with, like, your groups. So I actually didn't, like, there wasn't many times that I would hang around with her. So, like, every sports team say it, they always hang around in their little groups. Mine was, like, Jess Breach, like, Hannah. So mine was sort of the younger ones. So I didn't actually spend that much time with her. But I guess she was more of a, she would hate if she heard this, but, like, a mummy kind of figure to some of us younger people, I'll say. And she'd try to keep you in check and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how she would take that if she was listening to this. You say then hanging around in your groups, obviously with the way camps are and everything at the moment, I guess it's a lot more restrictive than you're used to. But you mentioned earlier playing a lot of Xbox and things like that. Is that something that you're finding different ways of spending time in your groups, even if you can't do it sort of face to face?
Yeah, so you literally cannot come in out of your room quite a lot of the time, which is so boring. And I honestly don't know what, like, so I play Xbox now, me, Poppy, Abby Ward and Sarah Byrne and Hannah play on Xbox together. And we were saying on it, what do people do that don't do this? Like, there's only so much TV you can watch. Like, it must be so boring. I don't know what I'm doing. But you can see one another and go for a little walk, but it's only, like, you're only set to a certain time. You can't go in, like, big groups and stuff. So it's, like, it's good to get out to training because you can actually see each other and, like, talk a lot. But I don't know what people do that don't play Xbox.
Are there any particular games you're playing? Are you sticking to sort of the rugby based games, or is it more just keeping far away from rugby?
We only play Warzone. Like, we don't have any. I don't even have another game on my Xbox. I literally just play Warzone. I think that's the same for the other girls as well.
Were you much of an Xbox player before all of this, or is it just necessity?
No, I think I got it during the first lockdown. I used to play when I was younger. I used to love playing on, like, my PS3 when I was younger. And then in the first lockdown, I used to sit in my brother's room and sometimes watch him play Warzone. I was like, do you know what? I actually want to have a go. And then I spoke to my friend about it and he was like, yeah, I've got one under my, like, an Xbox under my bed that I don't use. And I was like, can I have it? And he gave it to me. So I was like, oh, okay. So I started playing with some of the boys at home. And then I think Abby first had hers, which made Poppy get one. And then we all started forming a little group of Warzone players together. So now we all play together.
It's amazing what lockdown has led many of us to.
I know. It's quite funny.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the Players Podcast.
I thinking back to a time before all of lockdown and going back a long way, but I remember you go on your Twitter profile and it says that you're a double Grand Slam champion and a double Premier 15s champion, and it's so easy to forget that you are just 22 at the time of recording and you've already achieved so much. I guess the five-year-old you, when she first started playing rugby all those years ago, would she ever have imagined that at this stage you would have achieved what you have done already?
Absolutely not. I used to run around those little tags around my waist, just having fun with all the boys. I would never have thought it would have actually got that far. And even when I got a bit older, I actually did not watch women's rugby until probably I got into under 20s. Like, I didn't really realise much of, like, obviously I knew there was women's rugby, but I never used to really watch them because I didn't think that I'd ever really make the team or it would even turn professional. So I sort of like would just go about my life, like play rugby on a Sunday, play football on a Saturday, and, you know, go to school. And it was only till I went actually to Hartbury College and started playing in the under 20s that I was like, oh, this could actually go somewhere. And then I started to push myself quite a lot when I went to Hartbury, because I was like, yeah, this, I could get somewhere here. And then into under 20s, I went into under 20s, so was like, okay, we want to get into that full England squad. And then it came out that you could actually be professional as a rugby player, a women's rugby player. And then further, I was like, right, I can actually make something out of this now. So when I was 5, I was just running around being crazy and did not imagine this. And probably when I was even like under 15s and under 18s, I didn't think it would go this far, but I'm very happy that it has gone this far and that we can be professional now.
So when you were playing from the age of sort of like 5 to 18, was it simply just the love of rugby that kept you coming back, or were you thinking that was it somewhere in the back of your mind that I could play for England at some point?
The thing that mostly kept me coming back was the fact that my dad was the coach. We had to take me all the time. It was the fact that, so I got into the pathway at under 15s. So I think that was it, that knowing that I was quite good because I was in the pathway to keep me coming back. And obviously it was the love of rugby, like the friends that you make in rugby is crazy, like lifelong friends. So it was just like purely so fun. And as I say, like I met Jess Breach. She lives all the way down by the seaside, so that's so far from my house. But I met her in the camps of the pathway, so London South East. I met her there. So it was just like, you know, having all these friends from across the country and just like enjoying playing rugby. And it wasn't until I then got into the, like, start getting into England setups, it was then like, oh yeah, I could play for England.
You mentioned you're 5 years old running around tags on playing with the boys. When was the first, were you literally the only girl sort of playing at the time, or when was the first time you started playing alongside girls as well as boys?
I started playing alongside girls when I was under 12s, that's when I had to move over to a girls team. But before that, I was just playing with the boys all the time. But there's the boys that I was playing with, loads of them are still like, I'm still really close with them. Like, I always see some of the boys that I played with now, and they're actually really supportive of it, and they always follow my rugby and always see how it's going. One of them will sometimes go out kicking with me, so that's fun. And yeah, the others will just like watch on TV and stuff.
Do you find that people that have grown up playing alongside girls have a very different opinion of women's rugby than those that maybe haven't experienced that, or, you know, the classic sort of social media trolls? Do you think there's like two very distinct types of people in their understanding of the women's game?
Massively. I think because some of the boys have seen me grow and seen what I've had to go through, they're very for women, like they're really supportive of women's rugby, and they're always saying like, well done to me. And I say like watching my me on TV, or just like watching Twitter when we're playing for Saracens, like seeing how it's going, And I think the boys that didn't either get to play with girls or have never seen it are obviously like the trolley ones that don't really appreciate it as much, but the ones that have seen what I've gone through. And I think this is for a lot of girls. Like, this isn't just for the boys that I get surrounded by, who I played with, because I know that Jess has quite a few that support her. I think they end up appreciating it a lot more because they've played with a girl from the young age and then seen what they've gone through. They are really supportive, and would be nice if the other ones could be as supportive and like just watch a game of girls rugby, because I like it will change your mind, especially as I said at the start of the podcast about the league. Like, it's changed so much this year, and there's some seriously good rugby being played, and I think it will change a lot of people's minds if they watch games like that.
What age were you when you first started to notice that, you know, people might have a problem with girls playing rugby, or that girls might be treated differently to boys?
There was a little story where I decided I felt like I wasn't getting past the ball in the A team when I was younger with the boys, and I asked to be in the B team with my friend Alfie. I kicked off, but I think that was just me wanting to play with Alfie the whole time. But I think it was when I got into the fact that I had to go over to the girls' side, and then also going into secondary school, like, people were saying stuff like, girls shouldn't play rugby, like, calling me names. That's when I was a bit like, oh, okay. But then I wouldn't really take notice of it, because then I'd go off on a Sunday and a Wednesday, like, train and play with all the girls that were there. So I was like, well, clearly we do. There's quite a lot of girls here. There's also a pathway that girls can get into to make it to England. So I didn't really take notice of, like, what people had to say about it, because I was like, I want to be as good as I can be at rugby. And I'd look back and be like, well, what are you going to do with your life? Just, like, try calling names all your life or what? Because, like, at least I want to make something out of my life, sort of thing.
It's interesting reading a piece that was published on you this week, and you saying about how you have come across a couple of people that name called you at school, and that you've actually now massively got the upper hand on them. I guess that must have been quite a nice feeling on those occasions that you spoke about.
Yeah, I just find it really funny, because it's like, oh, I've made it to, like, I didn't listen to you, and I carried on playing, and I carried on trying to be the best I could be to try play for England. And now you're the one saying, like, oh, well done, but you weren't supportive when I was trying to be, like, trying to push that. And as I said, like, with rugby, you make so many friends, and loads of people ask me, like, what would you say to a girl that's starting rugby or, like, gets bullied? And I just don't take notice of anyone that tries to put you down about it. Go to the rugby session. You'll make so many friends with all the girls there, because every rugby club I've ever seen or been to, all the girls are so, like, tight as a friendship. Like, you will make your friends there, and you will just take no notice of what the people that try to bully you or say, like, rugby's not for girls or anything like that. You will not take notice of it, because the girls that you then go play rugby with will, like, be so fun and make you so happy. Like, you will just not take notice of what other people have to say.
Is it purely boys that sort of say these things about girls that play rugby, or do you get girls saying that about girls who play rugby as well? Or is it just an educational thing across the board that we need, really?
I have personally never come across girls that have said anything bad. I mean, you do get the occasional girl who will be like, oh, you're so pretty, as if you play rugby. Like, I'm so shocked that you play rugby, you're, like, really pretty, sort of something like that. And you're just like, pretty girls can play rugby too. Like, any girl can play rugby. But I think the worst of it does come from the boys, because they think, obviously, it's a male-dominated sport sort of thing. Like, only men should play it. And they think girls will be, like, rubbish at it, which is why I come back to the fact of, like, go watch a game. Like, it will change your mind. I wouldn't say girls, no, I've never come across, personally, I've never come across girls that have been horrible about it. I would just say you get the occasional thing of what I said, like, oh, you're really pretty, I can't believe you play rugby sort of thing.
Do you think there needs to be more of an opportunity for girls, especially in secondary school, to play rugby? I'm just thinking back to my experiences, like rugby was only played by the boys and football was played by the girls and netball was played by the girls, and like that, the girls never got the opportunity to play rugby. But do you think there should just be more chances just to be able to pick up a ball, and then that also will have that knock-on effect of other people can see that girls can play rugby as well?
Yeah, massively. I didn't have any... We weren't even allowed to play football, us girls. So it was rugby and football we didn't play. It was like the classic hockey, netball, rounders, gymnastics. I actually got put on PE report when I was younger because I used to mess around so much in my PE lessons because I wanted to play football or like do something else, like play rugby, football, do what like the boys were doing because it looked so much more fun than what us girls were doing. So I got told off messing around so much. And I used to get told I was a bit too violent when I'm playing hockey because I used to whack the ball so hard. And then I was too rough in netball as well and all this stuff. So, yeah, I used to try to play football as much as I can. I was like, can we play football, please? Because I'm so bored of playing hockey or netball right now. But I do personally think that girls should be allowed, like, they should introduce, like, football and rugby and all different kinds of sports when you're younger, because you could really hate sport until you find that one sport that you could be really good at or you really enjoy. So I think girls should be introduced to all different, not just rugby, like all different types of sport, because then they get the, well, it's good to keep them active for one, and also they could find something that they really enjoy. And for me personally, I would say I'm so glad that I didn't stick to one sport when I was younger, because I probably would have got quite bored of it. I used to play like all different sports, but my main two were football and rugby, and I used to really enjoy that I could play both. So I think it is key that they should play all of them, but also not just the like the girl-dominated sports, like introduce them to other stuff.
Do you think there should also be more opportunities slightly later on, maybe the school life, of doing activities where you have the boys and the girls together? So I did PE at A level, and it was a mixed group, and we would go out and we'd go and play mixed rounders together. We play mixed volleyball. We try netball, but for the boys were useless because there were just so many rules that we weren't aware of, and we just kept getting pulled up on it. And it was good fun, and it was competitive. Do you think that there should be maybe more opportunities like that at the slightly later age, or is that maybe something that might not work in all cases?
We had that as GCSE and we found it quite fun. I think it made everyone like more, like especially the girls, like more willing to put more effort into it. And I actually wasn't on PE report back then in GCSE year because I used to be able to be with the boys and like play the sports with them, and they would also try netball as well, and they'd be too rough for it, but it was quite funny. But we did love mixed rounders. That was great fun. But yeah, I think that should be like a thing for all years. I actually know a teacher who decided to bring it into her school, that it would be it wouldn't be like boys and girls and different PE, it would be on ability. So you'd be like set one, set two, like you'd have in your English, maths and of that, so then you could play a different variety of sport and you should all be at a, like the same level. So it doesn't matter if you're playing football or hockey, you'd all be at the same level, so it'd be quite enjoyable because it'd be a mix.
The only thing I can think of is that, you know, if you do have boys and girls mixing, children can be very cruel and boys can be very cruel. And I was reading a piece earlier this week about England Sevens player Abby Burton and some of the comments that she said she received as she was developing, and she was very sporty and she was quite muscly from an early age. And I guess, is that something that desperately, well, not desperately, but something that needs addressing, the acceptance that, you know, women can have muscles and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that?
Yeah, that is something that definitely needs accepting. I also was a lot bigger than some of the girls at my school. They didn't necessarily pick up on the muscles fact, but it was more the fact that I played rugby. But I think it does need addressing, because even when you find girl gymnasts, they can be a lot. There was a gymnast at our school and she was muscly, more muscly than the other girls. And I think it just comes to, like, it's come to a point now, like, just accept it. Like, girls do what, like, are going to do what they want to do. And if that's what they want to do, and if that's what they're good at, then their body needs to be prepared to be the best it can be for them to be good at that. So it's time, like, boys, they need to be muscly for what they need to do. So do girls. Like, if a boy needs to be smaller for something, like modeling, or like a girl needs to be smaller for modeling, then fine. Like, you shouldn't just come at someone for that, how they look, just because that's what they've chosen to do. Because if they enjoy that, just let them enjoy that. That's how I personally see it. And I know when you're younger, you do not see it like that. And I've grown to see it like that. But I think that's what needs to be taught from a younger age, is that anyone can do what they like, and it doesn't matter what they look like.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
Is that something that you think will change as sort of our generation become parents and start having children in the next 10, 15, 20 years? Or do you think that actually there's still a lot of people of our age who actually still don't appreciate or aren't accepting of the fact that, you know, women can have muscles and it's absolutely fine?
I think our generation might be a bit better at pushing it onto our children. However, there still are people in our generation that are a bit like, girls having muscles is a bit weird. Like, I know there are still a few people. I would say it's getting better, but looking back, like what I said about that teacher doing the mixed PE, I know they can, like, children can be cool, but could that be a way of helping boys realize that girls can actually be really good? Because I remember when I used to play with the boys sometimes, and they'll be like, oh my god, you're actually really good. Like, I went to Hartbury, and that's when we mixed there to do some of our rugby stuff, and then we'd play football as well. And some of them were like, oh, that's sick, like, that's so good that you can do that. And they were actually quite amazed, but they wouldn't be like, oh, that's horrible that you can do that. They were like, whoa, like, I didn't know you could do that, that's so cool. So I think, like, that could be a good thing to do. Like, the boys could actually realize the girls' potential, and actually, like, sort of feed off it and push them. Or it could swing the other way. But I think it should probably start with that. And then if, you know, is then the teacher's or the parents' job to be like, no, you should be encouraging the girl to be like that, same as you should encourage your boys to be like that.
Is it also about showing why the individual needs those muscles? So, for example, for you, you need to have strong legs because of, you know, breaking through the tackle or being able to run fast or being able to kick far. Is that explanation as to why that individual might need that body shape as well, that people can then understand, so it makes sense now, sort of, that sort of thing?
Yeah, no, I think definitely as well. I think that's also when you come into the GCSE PE, like, you are taught about, you are then sat down in the classroom and you do go through all of, like, that muscle stuff and all the stuff around PE, you get taught, so they're probably more aware of it then. And probably half the boys at that point haven't even been in the gym themselves, so they're probably getting a bit more aware of it themselves then. But I think, yes, they need to be told from a younger age that you do need muscles to play this sort of sport. And, like, say a gymnast needs these muscles, a rugby player would need these, like, to grow these muscles, a footballer would need to grow these muscles, because, like, it helps them in their sport and makes them better. I do think, yeah, that would be key for people, like, children to be taught about that, so they can then acknowledge that, oh, that's why they look like that, that's going to help them in their sport, and, like, push them further.
Have you ever found yourself maybe not shying away, but sort of trying to hide the fact that you are muscular or anything like that, or is it something that you're actually just very, very proud of and that you know that how useful and how much it benefits you in your sport?
I would say I shy away from anything because I personally know that this is going to help. I know I'm not going to look like some of the girls from back home that don't really go to the gym, like they just go about their day and do whatever. I know I'm not going to look like her, and I know I look like how I am because I want to be playing for England in the World Cup. There are certain, I'm going to be honest, there is a certain top that I cannot wear. There's like, you know, the little cami strappy tops. I actually don't look good in them. And a lot of rugby girls say the same, like because of our pec muscles, shoulders, like they're just so much bigger and they are probably made for more petite girls anyway. So I probably will never wear one of them because it just makes me look quite ugly. but I wouldn't say I shy away from like wearing anything else. Like I wear everything else quite proudly, and a lot of people actually do say like, oh, I like rugby girls do here, oh, your legs look nice, and a lot of girls do, other girls say that about us, so that is nice that the other girls are like, oh, you work on your legs, like that looks really nice, sort of thing. So yeah, I wouldn't say I shy away from wearing much except for those strappy cami tops because they actually just don't fit properly on me.
Fair enough. Something we talked about earlier is having more women's rugby on free-to-air TV where everyone can watch, and do you think that that could also help not just grow women's rugby but also grow the acceptance of the fact that rugby in particular welcomes anybody shape and size, and that it doesn't really matter and people just get used to seeing women and men, you know, looking however but playing at the highest level of rugby?
That is literally, you are answering what I was going to say when saying the question, that I was going to be like, if they watch it they'll be more accepting because you can see that everyone who plays rugby is a completely different shape and size. I think one of my friends was doing a piece on like confidence, and someone, oh, it was one of my friends who's a bit of an influencer on Instagram, was talking about confidence. And one of this girl wrote back to her and said, I just want to say, like, I love your stuff. And I've actually, a way I've built confidence is joining a girls rugby team, because you get there and everyone's different shapes and sizes, but you get accepted and everyone's so nice and lovely there. And my friend came over and showed me it. And I was like, that is actually just amazing that someone's wrote that in. And the person didn't know me and Chloe were friends, but it's just so nice to see that that's what is happening to other girls. They're going to rugby clubs and they feel really accepted there by all the girls, and they're just having a lot more fun and becoming more confident because they've gone into a rugby team and realised that everyone's different shapes and sizes, but you can be accepted by anyone there.
Definitely. And what would have made that transition even greater and giving people more awareness and acceptance is having a World Cup this year. Obviously that's been postponed, pushed back a year. But am I right in thinking that it was as much of a shock to you as a player as it was to us as a fan that it was going to be postponed?
When you guys found out, we found out basically. That's how shocking it was.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the Players podcast.
Calendar out. We were planned to do this on this day, this on this day. We were going to the World Cup 2 weeks early because we're going to quarantine there. We were so set that we were going. All of a sudden, something comes up on social media about it. And my friend saw it and she was like, girls, what is this? And we're like, oh my God, what? 30 minutes later, we get a message on our England group chat saying it's been postponed. And then it also just flooded through the media, all of it. And we were like, as if we had no, like even our coaches were told that lunchtime. So we knew in the evening, our coaches were told lunchtime. We had like no inkling that that was going to happen. No, we were so set that we were going. And then that all of a sudden that happens. So yeah.
Is that an area where you think that there still needs to be improvement in the women's game in terms of the organisation from the top and, you know, the communication? Because that does not sound...
No, it was not.
As someone who works in sports comms, that's not an ideal situation.
No, it was actually not great to see it on social media first. Yeah, it would have been nice to be told before some of the public, basically. But it had come from New Zealand and then got out, so someone had probably like heard it through and then like told someone else before like we were obviously told, and that's how it got there. But yes, it would be nice if we were told a bit earlier than everyone else, but it is what it is. I think we're all in shock. Some people are still quite gutted about it. Some people are like, okay, we move on. Got another year now to prepare. But yeah, it's still quite shocking. And the fact that I don't want to put the Olympics to shame or anything, but the fact that we can still see that the Olympics is going to go ahead and there's so many more people that are going to that than there would have gone to the World Cup, as in like opposed to teams. Like you've only got your set 35 players from each teams, whereas the Olympics you've got hundreds of thousands of people going to that. It's a bit like, how can you control that but you can control us on a smaller scale? But I mean, it is what it is. It's probably quite good that it's been pushed back, because now we get fans. I mean, it's really nice that your family can now come to the World Cup. It'd be my first hopefully if I get there, my first World Cup, and it'd be really nice to see that my family can be there and that we don't just have New Zealanders in the stand, because that probably would have been horrific.
Yeah, especially if you ended up playing New Zealand in an important game.
Yeah.
It's also, I think, one thing for me that frustrates me about it is because we've got such an amazing summer of sport coming up. We've got the men's European Football Championships, you've got the Olympics, the Paralympics, you've got all sorts of things going on, and the Women's Rugby World Cup was coming at the back of that, and that would have been at sort of to continue the momentum of an amazing summer of sport and keep people watching. Whereas, I mean, there's loads of stuff going on next year. I think there's the Women's Football Euros, there's Birmingham 2022. But I guess sort of, is it frustrating that the potential momentum to grab in even more people off the back of the momentum of this summer of sport that we're going to have this year, that's not going to happen? I guess that must be frustrating for you.
Yeah, it is. In that sense, it is really quite upsetting that, you know, it would have been like after the Olympics, everyone is so hyped up and everyone's like so for sport. It would have been so nice to like then be off the back of that. But as I say, like it's been changed. It is what it is. Hopefully if we get some other sport next summer, that can be hyped up a little bit and then we can come off the back of that. But I mean, hopefully it does bring fans in from different countries. Like I said, like it won't just be New Zealand fans then. Hopefully we get fans from all over the world coming to support their teams. And it's nice that your family can come. And hopefully we'll get some good coverage on the TV.
It was ITV, I remember, for 2017. It was ITV4, and then ITV broadcast the final against New Zealand, which...
Well, yes, one of them, please.
Obviously, playing New Zealand in New Zealand, having New Zealand beating you guys in the final last time, I know obviously you weren't involved, but there'll be players that were involved. Is that sort of the dream scenario for a potential final matchup at the World Cup, or is that something that you guys aren't really thinking about too much?
I think because of our pool draw, we're very much focused on our pool draw first. However, it would be huge to play New Zealand in the final on their home ground and hopefully beat them on their home ground in the final. That would be massive. But I think for us, it's getting through those pool stages first, because we've got some big teams to face in the pool stages.
And just how exciting a time is this for England and women's rugby, because you guys are, I think, not still number one in the world rankings?
Yeah.
You are six, as you said, you've won, you're a double Grand Slam Six Nations champion. And the talent that's coming through from the club game into the international game, like there are so many good, young, exciting players, and it seems to be like a never-ending conveyor belt at the moment. I guess how exciting is it to be involved in English women's rugby at this exact moment in time?
It is really exciting. And as I was saying about all those camps that we've been doing leading up to the Six Nations, we've had some of the younger under-20s girls in, and they've come in and they've done so well each time they've come in. And it's really good to see that, like, this young talent is still flooding through, and like that from probably way back when the talent probably wasn't as like, powerful, whereas now like these girls are coming in and half of them are actually being named in the Six Nations squad. So it's really exciting to see all these girls that are coming through It's exciting to see them in the league, like playing and playing really well. And I think it is exciting for England rugby.
And that having that increased depth and pool of talent, does that just make you as an individual and the rest of the players just have to feel like you've got to up your game just because of the number of people vying for one or two spots on the pitch?
Yeah, massively. I think everyone has up their skill set, not just because of these young people coming through, but in the league as well. Like, as I said, it was like really competitive. So everyone's having to up their skill set and learn quickly because there's teams coming at you from everywhere at the moment and everyone's trying to be number one. So I think it is pushing everyone to be like 10% better, more than 10% better, because it's honestly, it's taken such a jump all of a sudden. It's incredible, but it's also pushing everyone to be like, God, I need to, like, what do I need to do to be better? I need it now.
It's certainly, as you said, an exciting time for women's rugby, and that all starts this weekend with the Six Nations coming back. So, Zoe, thank you so much for joining us. Wishing you the very best of luck. Can't wait to hopefully see you lifting that Six Nations trophy once again. Unfortunately, it won't be in front of fans, but we'll be cheering you on from home. And yeah, best of luck to you and all the England girls.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Once again, thank you to Zoe for a fantastic interview and providing us with such great insight into a variety of topics. As we mentioned there, the Women's Six Nations does kick off this weekend. Probably some of the games have already been played by the time you listen to this, but for all of us, it's a fantastic opportunity to watch all the games going to be shown either on BBC Two or on BBC iPlayer in our regions or just across the UK. So yeah, make sure you're tuning in. It's going to be a brilliant tournament, even though it's not quite what we're used to. Thank you also to our partners at the Mintridge Foundation and again to Think Beyond Sport for the help in putting this interview together, and of course to all of you guys for listening as well. It really does mean a lot to us. We'll be back with another episode very soon, so in the meantime, make sure you've subscribed to Sportspiel on all of your usual podcast providers and followed us on social media using the handle @SportspielPod.